So, first things first, ACT stands for Acceptance and Commitment Therapy, one of the key therapeutic modalities that I use in my work. The acronym is deliberate, ACT is deliberate in that it's very much about action. What are you going to do? How are you going to live? That kind of thing. And the title of my talk is also very deliberate because it's about how I want to act as a Christian and how I try to understand difficult Christian behaviours in others from a psychological perspective. These are my hopes for today. I really hope that you're going to learn a little something about me. I hope that you're going to learn a little bit about ACT, about how does ACT fit into my faith. I want to maybe you might contemplate a little how ACT applies to your faith, and also maybe how ACT might help you relate to others from different brands of faith. I also just really hope that you find it interesting because these things are really, really dear to my heart. I feel really, really vulnerable standing up here today. Brené Brown defines vulnerability as showing up and being seen. And thinking about it this way simultaneously delights and liberates and terrifies me. So this is a picture of how I want my vulnerability to look. Open. And this is what it actually feels like. So when you commit to doing something that really matters, do you sometimes feel fear? Yeah? This is normal. When things matter to us, we're open to all kinds of unwanted feelings because they matter. When we pursue things that matter to us, the choice is not in whether or not to have the difficult thoughts and feelings that come with it. It's in how we respond amidst those feelings. So coming back to snakes and sunsets. As I stand here before you, my mind is swimming with a whole bunch of thoughts about it. Be careful, you're talking about things you care about. What if people think it's stupid? What if it's too simple? Everyone else would have figured this out years ago, right? Let it go. What if I'm wrong? Did you really invite the president of the ACT Society to hear you talk about this? Good grief. Lovely to have you. What if people look bored? What if there are questions that I can't answer? What if it doesn't make sense? What if I'm inadvertently disrespectful to my audience or to others? What would my dad think? Please don't compare me to my dad. Please don't remind me of my dad because I will cry. Don't do it. Stay in the crowd where it is safer and don't mess it up. Any of that sound familiar? Yeah. With all of these thoughts lurking, what kind of feelings do you think that I might be having? Anxious. Yep, and anxious, nervous, stressed, flustered, all of those things. And these thoughts for me are like the snake lurking. This situation feels aversive to me. Why? Because it's important to me. I'm sharing with you about things that matter. I'm presenting some ideas on Christianity that are entirely of my making rather than building on the ideas of others. Because you people matter to me a lot. So in essence, this raises the highest alarm as a potential threat to my sense of self and to my inclusion in the group. So given this particular context, I don't get a choice about these very uncomfortable thoughts and feelings. They are a very reasonable and human way to react. But I do get a choice about how I respond. So one way that I can respond to all of this is to avoid. So that's the choice that I've made for the last 2 years at least, since this idea came to me. Avoidance has served me well in lots of ways. The problem is I can't stop thinking about these ideas, and part of my values is to be courageous, to be willing to speak up about things that matter, to share my ideas independent of whether people agree with me. So in reality, to speak up causes really uncomfortable feelings, but to stay silent also causes uncomfortable feelings. I can challenge myself to stand before you as I am now, but I can do it while immersed in my aversive context, which means my behavioural repertoire will be more rigid and narrow. So that's like we talked about with the snakes. This will make for a much less authentic talk. I won't be able to speak from the heart. It will be really difficult for me to flexibly respond to how you lot are experiencing and processing things. You'll see my body become more inhibited. I'll have reduced capacity to manage interruptions or diversions of attention. And this will mean that you definitely won't get the best of me. And it will mean that I'll walk away unsatisfied. So here's what I want to do. I want to stand here with my fear, not in spite of it. I want to be open, committed to sharing with you, my church family, about things that make my heart and mind sing. I want to be present, aware of God's presence, and aware of each one of you, all whilst holding my fear lightly. So basically, I want to make room for my challenging internal context and act in a way that is consistent with my values. The reality is I may or may not succeed in this today, but I no longer want that to be the reason that I stay quiet and choose option one. I'm going to choose to speak up about things that matter to me, and whether or not I can do that effectively is a source of information for me to integrate for future decision making. It's not a determinant of whether my values are right or wrong. So what does it mean to act like a Christian? Well, I've always been really struck by this very famous quote from Gandhi, where he said, "I like your Christ, I do not like your Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ." How can it be that Jesus, this pinnacle of a role model, has followers all over the world who not only behave nothing like him, but are also blind to the fact that they're nothing like him? I'm also prepared to entertain that I'm the one that's blind and I'm missing something. But that aside for now, I think that ACT can help me to understand or to explain this. So I want to talk about how I've come to understand it. And this talk is intentionally focused mostly on how I want to live out my faith, and to a lesser extent on inviting you to think about how you live out yours and how you might want to. It's also a bit about how we interact with others, especially other Christians, maybe leading by example, maybe speaking up when we need to. I am a clinical psychologist. My job entails the study of human behaviour, cognition and emotion. That is, trying to understand people and why we do what we do. Then using this knowledge and understanding to work with people in a personal and individualised way to help them be the person they always wanted to be, or I might say the person they were designed to be. So here's a picture of a hexaflex. So this comes from the ACT model, and at the centre of this is psychological flexibility. We'll come back to this a little bit later. I'm also a Christian. I believe God made us. I believe there is method in the madness, a reason that we are the way that we are. For my world to make sense, I had to be able to fit psychology into my belief in God, and I had to be able to fit my belief in God into my psychological framework. Over the last 10 years, this has involved moving aside or even throwing out some popular psychological principles and some popular religious beliefs. At times, this was really painful and isolating. But overall, it's involved a very satisfying integration of the two. So what is ACT? ACT falls under the banner of contextual behavioural science, which is a branch of psychological research dedicated to the alleviation of human suffering. ACT has an underlying assumption that painful feelings are an inevitable consequence of pursuing a rich and meaningful life. It's not the feelings themselves that cause us to suffer. Rather, it's the way we respond to those feelings. We're wired to reduce our psychological flexibility when we experience difficult feelings like fear, sadness, depression, anger, that kind of thing. So I've just got a little video, it's about 4 minutes long, that gives like a nice little summary. I hope we've checked the sound, haven't we?
All day long, humans are doing things. We're always doing something, even if it's just sleeping, we're always doing something. And we can broadly classify what humans do into two large groups of behavior. We can talk about towards moves, we're doing things where we're acting in line with our values, behaving like the sort of person we want to be, acting effectively, doing things that help to make life better. Or we're doing away moves, moving away from our values, behaving unlike the person we want to be, acting ineffectively, doing things that don't improve life or make it worse. And what we're aiming to do in this course is give you a lot more choice so that you can choose to do more towards moves. The more you choose towards moves, the richer, fuller, and more meaningful your life is likely to become. The more effective you are likely to become at creating the sort of life and achieving the sorts of goals you want to achieve. Now, what happens is that in a challenging situation, difficult thoughts and feelings show up for us. And when we get hooked by those difficult thoughts and feelings, we tend to start doing away moves. Difficult thoughts and feelings might include depression, anxiety, stress, pain, suffering, fear, anger, guilt, thoughts about not being good enough, thoughts about failing or screwing it up. A whole range of difficult thoughts, feelings, emotions, memories, urges, sensations. When we get hooked by this stuff, typically our default setting is we get pulled away from our values and we start acting ineffectively. And so what I'm aiming to do in this course is give you a lot more choice so that when you're in those challenging situations, whether it's relationship issues, health issues, financial issues, work issues, whatever those challenges are for you, when those difficult thoughts and feelings are showing up for you, I want you to be able to unhook yourself from those thoughts and feelings and make a choice, a wise choice, a choice that you decide as wise. I want you to have the freedom to choose towards moves, if that's what you want to do. So to do that, I'm going to introduce you to a bunch of helpers. Helpers that are going to help you to unhook from the difficult thoughts and feelings. And those helpers fall into two categories. Firstly, there's values. So we're going to spend a lot of time clarifying what values are and using those values to set goals and create action plans and guide what you do in this life as you move forwards in the face of your challenges and difficulties. And we're going to be learning mindfulness skills. Skills that help you to unhook from difficult thoughts and feelings and refocus your attention on what's important and engage fully in your life and live in the present moment and make the most of this moment of life as it is right here, right now.
So there are six core processes in ACT that are depicted in hexaflex, And the idea in therapy is to move fluidly between these processes, depending on what's happening for the individual at the time, with the goal of increasing psychological flexibility. And psychological flexibility is about being fully present in our experience, to respond to our context in a way that moves us towards our values, and to adapt our behaviour so as to serve valued ends. Psychological flexibility is reasonably easy to practice in an appetitive context, but when the context is aversive, it can be so hard. So I'm going to share a little bit about how I got stuck in an aversive context last year, partly because I'm finally ready to speak about it publicly, and also because I really want to convey that ACT is not a quick and easy fix. This is not about saying, oh, we just need to embrace our feelings when it hurts. This is tough stuff. But I have had the immense privilege of using ACT to meet with people who are suffering, and I've watched them change and grow and heal as a result. So I think that that is a message worth sharing. So, my own private prison. Last year, I was stuck in a highly aversive context. I was harassed maliciously and relentlessly by someone incapable of hearing reason or responding to feedback. It shook the foundation of pretty much all areas of my life and most certainly my sense of self. I developed a deep and intense feeling of vulnerability in this world, and I wanted to run and hide from everything and everyone, even my family. It doesn't look like driving off and leaving my family behind, starting a new life where nobody knows me. It does look like being physically present but mentally absent, speaking in a detached voice, because to allow the feelings in would be too overwhelming, or frankly too confronting, because to show anyone how much I was hurting left me open to not having my needs met. So way better to keep the wall up. And with my wonderful church family, it looks like disengagement, lack of eye contact, don't ask anyone how they are because they might ask you in return, and that's too much for me. I'm not going to go into the specifics of why, but I was terrified, not of a nasty email, but of what else was being plotted. I developed frequent debilitating migraines and gastrointestinal distress. My memory of last year is disturbingly foggy, an effect of severe anxiety. I couldn't find a way out. Maybe it was an imagined threat, maybe not. No one could tell me or reassure me. Many of you have probably heard me say, please don't say anything to scare me. That's because a lot of people did. I heard things like, who knows what he could do? Or, I heard a story about a man who... I've worked really hard to remember my compassion in response to these well-meaning comments, but each one of them meant that my anxiety got worse. When psychologically flexible, I can keep that in perspective, but flexibility was gone. Threat was everywhere, and every little thing added to it. So much so that I hid. My context became so very narrow because the world, all of it, was too threatening. Do the bare essentials. Be a mum, look after the house, go to work, be polite, then go to my room and hide. So can you see me making room for the distressing feelings that these words bring up in me? Can you see me practicing compassion for myself and others? Can you see how I was trapped in an aversive context with very little psychological flexibility? Can you spot the running, fighting, hiding behaviour? And is anyone thinking, but you're a psychologist, why didn't you heal yourself? Admit it, go on. Or at the very least, why didn't you get some professional help? Well, the answer is that no one could accuse me of not trying. But I couldn't find the right therapist for me, and I was too vulnerable and overwhelmed to keep trying. But in the end, the things that did help pull me out of the abyss, it was ACT and also schema therapy. That's something for another day. But I had to be stronger before I could apply these things to myself. And do please ask me privately if you'd like to understand that more. So what happened with this particular person has had a massive impact on my life. And no, it's not an experience where it's helped me to grow and blossom into a stronger, more complete person. It's an experience where I've had to claw my way back from the edge of the abyss and painstakingly rebuild myself from a shell of a person. So if you're interested, I am angry. I am hurt. I am scared. I have a not very charitable opinion about what happened and about the people involved. And I'm not going to hide anymore. I'm grossly disillusioned with this world. Alyssa from a year ago could not have stood in front of you and declared that out loud. It would be too risky. The refurbished Alyssa is accepting that I have an opinion and I'm willing to share it for my own sake and hopefully for yours. I will not run from having an opinion. Instead, I choose to stand up and be open to feedback. I don't need to be right, and I want to listen with openness to other perspectives that might help inform my views. So this is time for Ian to practice how to hold his feelings lightly, because I know I'm really making him squirm right now. But when you run away from those feelings, it's really hard to... I mean, it's really easy to miss the connection. Because I really need you to hear that you're my superhero. And that... I have to hold back the feeling a bit or I'll cry and I won't be able to say anything. This man has tirelessly fought and advocated for me. He's been my strong and fierce protector and a warm blanket to enfold me. He refused to lay down and accept how I was being treated. Thank you. Okay. And breathe. So now that I'm feeling a little stronger, I've been thinking a lot more about how I want my faith to look. And what I've noticed is that week after week, especially in church, I've automatically been connecting my observations of faith to the processes in ACT. So I'm going to go through those processes individually and share some thoughts on what they mean to me and my faith. So first up is present moment awareness. And for me, this is where I find myself repeating the words, be still and know that I am God. For me, present moment awareness is about being fully present in the here and now, to be mindfully aware of your experience with openness and curiosity and without judgment. So I really want to be open to the experience and wonder of God, not just the bits that are comfortable for me to access, like love, but also the harder stuff, like can I be mindfully aware of God's presence in situations where I think he might not approve, when I want to be in charge, when I'm freaking out and I want to shut down. Does anyone else notice that it can be really hard to do that when you're in the midst of something difficult? I would say that's because our mind is drawn to threat and away from fully and wholly experiencing what is happening right here, right now. But unless there is an actual snake in the grass, I want to be mindfully aware of the wide array of feelings, both wanted and unwanted, that come with living a life connected to the divine and experience those as part of the context in which God is present everywhere. So there is difficult stuff, and there is the Lord your God in and amongst it all. Can you read that? Acceptance, finally realizing that red dot is impossible to catch. So other words for acceptance include to be open, to make room or make space, embrace, allow, or stop struggling. Acceptance is not the same as tolerance, putting up with, giving in or giving up. Like, it's not the same as liking or wanting a feeling. I want to practice openness to all of my feelings whilst continuing to focus on living a life that honours God. I want to stop struggling against feelings of overwhelm and instead remain connected. I want to acknowledge that other Christians can make me angry, and instead of shutting that down, I want to hold it lightly and actively work on how I can respond with love and grace. So defusion is about creating some distance between ourselves and our thoughts. When we get caught up or hooked by our thoughts, we lose sight of the things that really matter to us, and our perspective becomes narrow and limiting. I want to notice the uncomfortable thoughts without judgment, without giving them undue attention. We have thousands of thoughts every single day. I'm not sure about you, but some of mine don't fit with how I want to be as a Christian. I know that if I try and stop these thoughts, then I'm going to be engaging in running, fighting, hiding behaviour, and this is going to take me further away from my values. So I want to let my thoughts come and go like cars going past outside my house. Self as context is basically about opening up a perspective other than our own present context. It's about paying attention to the stories we tell ourselves and opening up to different views of self and also of others. There's lots of ways of thinking about this, but I just wanted to focus on my desire to flexibly respond to others whilst holding in mind Jesus as my role model and the presence of God as a constant. The area where this particularly comes to mind is in relating to other Christians who are more traditional in their practice, because I find this really hard. When someone tells me they're a Christian or that they go to church, I confess I tense and I withdraw. I assume judgment, superiority and narrow-mindedness. It's really hard to admit out loud. I seem to have a guilty until proven innocent attitude to other Christians. And these are the kinds of thoughts I was saying I want to recognise as inconsistent with my values. I want to diffuse from such thoughts and feelings, and I want to consider their perspective. What is it like to be them? What am I not understanding that contributes to their way of being? What do they need from me? How can I be of service to them, to leave them perhaps with a smile on their face from a positive exchange, and maybe even something for them to think about? So I don't need to read that. This is so values is the domain that first prompted my musings on this subject. So values are a bit like a compass. They don't tell you the destination, but they do point you in the direction that you want to be going. So when you're following a compass, I reckon there's this sense of rightness in it. You know, you can't see the finish line, but there's a sense of flow in following the right path. In lots of ways, identifying my values was really easy. Just follow Jesus. That's how I want to be. And if that's too complicated, let me put it this way. So this is where everything started falling into place for me, because I found a language to help organise the deconstructing of my faith away from rules and avoiding punishment, and reconstructing in a way that is guided by choice-driven behaviour. How do you want to be as a Christian rather than how you should be? Even now as I say this, my shoulders go tense and I hear in my head, well, it's not about what you want, Alyssa. It's about what God requires of you. This is the kind of stuff that I choose to respond to flexibly, to diffuse from my anxiety-inducing thoughts, to consider the perspective of the person presenting such a narrow view, and simultaneously consider that I do not believe it. Because God made us. I accept the story of evolution and I wholeheartedly believe that God is in all of evolution. So if he made us in a way such that we respond with far more authenticity and psychological flexibility when we choose our behaviour rather than acting through coercion, then it must be that he delights in our choosing to follow him rather than doing the right thing to be part of the group, to avoid damnation, to gain God's approval. Has anyone here ever had a sense of what you should do, what you wanted to do, but you didn't actually do it? Yes? Or have you ever done or not done something that just felt wrong? How does it feel when you act in a way that's consistent with your values?
Better.
And how does it feel when you don't? Worse. I want to commit to acting in a way that follows the example of Jesus, and I want to be psychologically flexible enough that when I don't, I can accept the unwanted feelings that come with that, defuse from the unhelpful thoughts, refocus on God and on my values, and get back up and try again. Every moment is an opportunity for committed action. And I want to let my light shine. I've got just a little bit to say on what does psychological inflexibility look like in Christianity. And I'm going to confess, I am so scared of going over 11 o'clock. I have a real fear about it. And I'm going to genuinely ask my church family if I can go a few minutes over, because these things are really important and I'd really like to share them with you. I won't go over a lot, I promise, maybe 5 minutes. Yeah. Okay. The benefits agency is always committed to being flexible, but only in certain limited, clearly defined circumstances. So here are my thoughts on behaviours that I see in other Christians that really raise my hackles. I want to try and understand this better so that I can respond as the best version of myself rather than resorting to my own version of running, fighting and hiding. So psychological inflexibility looks like getting stuck in unhelpful patterns of thinking, feeling and doing, a limited ability to change track in response to changing circumstance. This will be all of us at times, and it can be triggered by an aversive context, like when I sense a challenge about how I see the world or God, not disagreement, but challenge. But for some people, I'm contemplating whether they experience something about their relationship with God as aversive. And this hypothesis feels really strange to me. How could God possibly be aversive? But here are some examples of where I've seen this in action. It's when following the rules of Christianity seems to be a way of coping with life's pain, as if this is the answer to all of my problems. And the thing is, faith in God may indeed be the answer you've been looking for, but faith is different from following a set of rules so as to avoid suffering. It's when behaviour is driven by fear of damnation and living a Christian life is about avoiding sin in order to avoid punishment. I would extend this punishment beyond the fear of going to hell. I think it can also include a very real fear of exclusion from the group, or at very least judgment by our Christian peers. And I think sometimes God can be experienced like a punitive or a demanding parent, a parent who has your best interests at heart but needs to be tough in order to keep you in line. So this is where you might hear things like, oh, this terrible thing happened to me and I know that God is testing me. Or sometimes, I know that Satan is trying to stop me from doing whatever it is. So when we're unwilling to have uncomfortable feelings, we'll engage in forms of running, fighting and hiding behaviour. It's likely that we will fuse with unhelpful and inflexible thoughts, such as liberal interpretations of literal interpretations of Bible verses, perceived judgments from others, even some kind of version of don't sin. It's likely that we'll disconnect from our choice-driven behaviour, the things that deep in our heart we want to offer to the world, such that if I were to stop and ask you, why do you pray every single day? And if I were to keep wading through the away-driven answers, such as because it says so in the Bible, because it helps me focus for the day, because I heard a sermon about it, I might actually get to the value, because I want to have a relationship with God. When we're not connected to our faith-related values, our behaviour, though well-intentioned, is likely to move further and further away from our values. Psychological flexibility also means a narrow perspective, the inability to really see the other person and instead get caught up in our own headspace or perspective. So if you can imagine just for a moment that life is like a stage show, and on that stage are all your thoughts and all your feelings, everything that you can see, hear, touch, taste, and smell. At any moment, you can zoom in and focus the spotlight on any particular thing, or zoom out and watch the whole stage at once. So where do you want to focus? And what will you miss if the spotlight is too narrow? A narrow perspective focuses the spotlight on our own opinion and states, this makes no sense to me. The way that they do things doesn't make sense. I'm going to reject it. A broad and flexible perspective zooms out on the stage and asks, this makes no sense to me. How can I make sense of it? Almost done. So when it comes to Christianity, how do we know when someone is values-driven rather than rule-driven, and why does it matter? I reckon we can look for flexibility in behaviour. If you see flexibility, there should be some space for discussion and sharing of ideas and openness to consider other perspectives. You might not agree or even get along, but you can both listen with respect and perhaps learn from each other. If you notice inflexibility, how can you respond with openness and flexibility? The temptation is to argue and defend, but if someone is in an inflexible space, this almost certainly won't be productive. What could be different if we start from a place of understanding, respect and compassion for the individual, and considering that the rigidity you're experiencing is the result of an aversive context rather than their deeply held beliefs? How could you perhaps help them move away from their aversive context and towards the sunset? Or how about we keep it really simple and suggest just love one another, flexible or inflexible, right or wrong, can you choose love? So, in answer to the initial question, how can Christians be the way that they are? I think the answer is that we all need to be more flexible in our faith and religious practice. Not flexible in an everything goes kind of a way, but in an act way, to be psychologically flexible. I don't want my faith to be about rules. I don't want to hear should and must when it comes to God. And I want to make room in my heart and mind for people who do want to be or are driven by rules, just as Jesus did. I want to be connected to what matters to me and then actively walk that walk. To foster some healthy distance between myself and my values and consistent thoughts, to accept my experience as it is here in this moment as God intended. To maintain perspective, to connect to following the example of Jesus, to love God and love others, not because I'm scared of what will happen if I don't, but because I choose to. I want to let the love of God shine so brightly that others can't help but notice. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you for indulging me to go over time.
Thanks, Alyssa. Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't really have time for